in the earlier section of Mark 6, the story of the sending out of the 12 was interrupted by the account of Herod putting to death John the Baptizer. He did so in the midst of a great banquet, which was a display of Herod's imperial pretensions. It was a banquet designed to impress others, and that desire led Herod to consent to John's execution. In the passage before us today, we read of another meal, a banquet, if you will, on a grand scale. But this is far different from Herod's feast. Its motive is not pride, but compassion. It involves a great miracle, but the focus is not really on the miracle itself. Jesus seems more focused on the disciples than the miracle as he continues to train them for ministry. Mark narrates the episode to teach us more about Jesus and the nature of his kingdom. Once again, we'll hear strong echoes of the Old Covenant as Jesus fulfills God's prior dealings with his people in history. And I challenge you to give this familiar story a fresh hearing to see what you can learn about Jesus today. We're going to have a three-part outline, very simple. First of all, we're going to look at the setting where this takes place, the setting. Secondly, a shepherd. And then thirdly, some concluding remarks and application. We begin with the setting, and we're going to think about two aspects of the setting of this narrative. The first I'm calling a West Side story. We've noted before that geography is very significant in this gospel, and we have to keep track of the changing locations if we are to plumb the depths of Mark's meaning. So where does this account take place? Well, Jesus and the 12 are still on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. At the beginning of the chapter, Jesus was in Nazareth. Then in verse 6, he went about the villages in a circuit teaching. This is in Jewish territory, and it's into Jewish territory that Jesus sends the 12 on their inaugural mission. They've now returned and reported to Jesus, verse 30. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. Jesus tells them it is time to take a break for rest, but the crowd has other plans, verses 31 through 33. And he said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him." Well, first, let's note the theme of rest here. "And he," that is Jesus, "said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while, for there are many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat." We are not called to be workaholics for Jesus. Note that in the midst of vital ministry, right after they'd returned from their inaugural mission, Jesus calls the disciples to get away from the crowds to rest a while. Now, in his true humanity, Jesus knows what it is like to be tired. Jesus knows what it is like to be hungry. We have a high priest who can sympathize with us in the weakness of our flesh. He knows the value of refreshing rest, and he wants you, like his disciples, to experience it from time to time. Don't feel guilty about taking a break sometimes, even from ministry commitments, when that rest is what Jesus will provide to refresh you to do more. Now, getting back to the narrative, Jesus and the 12 travel by boat, but they don't cross the Sea of Galilee. We know this because the crowd rushes on foot and gets to the place they land before the boat arrives. If the boat had crossed the sea, this would have meant at least a 15 to 20 mile trek by foot, and the crowd could never have gotten there before Jesus. And so this is a West Side story, as Jesus, the 12, and the multitude are somewhere on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. And this is important to remember because it gives the story a Jewish setting, and as we'll see, it is a very Jewish story. This brings us to our second point about the setting. In addition to being a West Side story, it is also a wilderness tale. Our English translations obscure a significant geographical indicator of meaning in the text. In verse 31, Jesus calls the 12 to come away to a particular kind of place. Now, that place is described in different words in different translations. The New American Standard says a lonely place. The NIV says a quiet place. The ESV says a desolate place. The New King James says a deserted place. And while all these would be accurate descriptions of their destination, what Jesus literally speaks of is a desert place. And this word desert is the same word used of John baptizing in the wilderness. That's the word, the wilderness. And of the wilderness in which Jesus was tempted for 40 days back in chapter 1. And Mark emphasizes this location by using the description three times in our passage. Verse 31, come away by yourselves to the wilderness. Verse 32, and they went away in the boat to the wilderness. Verse 35, this is the wilderness, and the hour is now late. Jesus directs them, the 12, to a desert place, to the wilderness, and they are met there by a Jewish crowd. And as we'll see, it is much more than coincidence that this West Side story is also a tale of a multitude of Israelites in the wilderness. If that makes you recall the story of the Exodus from Egypt, then you're beginning to think like Mark's original Jewish audience would have been thinking. With this setting, Mark provides a clue to understanding what the feeding of the 5,000 is all about. Well, having considered the setting, we turn now to look at a shepherd. We read of the reunion of Jesus and the multitude in verse 34. And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. Our Jewish setting and Exodus motif is reinforced by the Old Testament language used here to describe the multitude. Before the Israelites entered the promised land, Moses speaks about his replacement to Yahweh. Numbers 27, 16 through 17. Moses says this, then let Yahweh, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation who may go out before them and go in before them, who may lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of Yahweh may not be like sheep which have no shepherd. Now Moses had been a shepherd for Israel. Psalm 77, 20, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And with Moses' death imminent, Yahweh was setting up Joshua to be a new shepherd over Israel so that they would not be like sheep without a shepherd. Moses was the first shepherd over Israel, but there would be many more. Unfortunately, the shepherds of God's people repeatedly failed in their calling. In Ezekiel 34, Yahweh has harsh words for the failing shepherds of Israel in that day. We read in Ezekiel 34, beginning at the beginning of the chapter, and the word of Yahweh came to me saying, son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, thus says Yahweh God to the shepherds, woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fatlings, but you do not feed the flock. The weak you have not strengthened, nor have you healed those who are sick, nor bound up the broken, nor brought back what was driven away, nor sought what was lost. But with force and cruelty you have ruled them. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and they became food for all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and on every high hill. Yes, my flock was scattered over the face of the earth, and no one was seeking or searching for them. And even today, we sometimes have those in positions of religious authority who abuse that authority. Sometimes we say that they fleece the flock. It goes back to this shepherding imagery, the failure to do what shepherds are called to do. Well, the Lord's answer to the problem of sheep without a shepherd is to say that he is going to take up that role himself. For Ezekiel 34 continues, beginning at verse 11. For thus says Yahweh God, indeed I myself will search for my sheep and seek them out. As a shepherd seeks out his flock on the day he is among his scattered sheep, so will I seek out my sheep and deliver them from all the places where they were scattered on a cloudy and dark day. And I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and will bring them to their own land. I will feed them on the mountains of Israel, in the valleys, and in all the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them in good pasture, and their fold shall be in the high mountains of Israel. There they shall lie down in a good fold and feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I will feed my flock, and I will make them lie down, says Yahweh God. I will seek what was lost and bring back what was driven away, bind up the broken and strengthen what was sick, but I will destroy the fat and the strong and feed them in judgment. Now, through the prophet Ezekiel, God makes this promise of what he will do. And this divine promise is fulfilled by Jesus, Yahweh in the flesh, who identified himself as the good shepherd of his sheep. Moses was the first shepherd of Israel. Jesus is the last shepherd of Israel, the ongoing shepherd of his church. The people have long been neglected by their leaders. He sees them. Jesus sees them in his day as sheep without a shepherd. And like a true shepherd, like a good shepherd, Jesus has compassion on them. And note the first demonstration of this compassion at the end of the verse 34. So he began to teach them many things. Now this is the story of a great miracle, and we always think about it in terms of the miracle, but we must remember that Jesus' primary calling was not the working of miracles, but proclaiming the kingdom of God. Recall what Jesus said to Simon when he told Jesus that the crowds were looking for him back in chapter 1. This was right after Jesus had been performing miraculous healings. And Jesus said to Simon, "Let us go into the next towns that I may preach there also, because for this purpose I have come forth." Jesus is being true to his purpose here in chapter 6 when he expresses compassion for the people of Israel by teaching them. He is acting as a shepherd, guiding the sheep in the way they should go. He is feeding them with his words. But as his teaching goes on, the day begins to wane, and the disciples get concerned about another kind of feeding. Verses 35 and 36. When the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desert place, and already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy for themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." Now, it's not the crowds who complain about being hungry. There's no indication that they desire to break off from hearing Jesus' teaching. But the 12, who don't seem fully to comprehend what is going on, raise the issue. Their suggestion is that Jesus disperse the multitude so that they can go buy food in nearby villages. The idea seems as reasonable as Jesus' response is unexpected. Verse 37, "But he answered and said to them, 'You give them something to eat.'" And the Greek adds here an unnecessary pronoun, put an extra emphasis on that word "you." Jesus tells the 12 that they, not anyone else, that they, not the people themselves, should feed the multitude. And eventually the 12 will be used in feeding the crowd, but at this point they are baffled. And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat?" Now, a denarius was about a day's wage for a laborer. So 200 denarii was the bulk of an annual salary. It was a lot of money. This is beyond their resources, but they are about to learn of the resources of Jesus. Verse 38, "But he said to them, 'How many loaves do you have? Go and see.' And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them to make them all sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in ranks in hundreds and fifties. Ignoring the disciples' suggestion to send the crowd away, Jesus asked them to find out how many loaves of bread are actually on hand. And then when they report 5 and 2 fish, Jesus commands them to seat the crowd in an orderly fashion. The disciples are acting as Jesus' intermediaries in seating the crowd at his command. They are going to feed them. Now let's note a few Old Covenant allusions in these verses. Get the picture that Mark is painting in your mind. These people seem like sheep without a shepherd in the wilderness, and suddenly they're seated on the grass. Put your Israelite thinking caps on. What comes to mind? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Jesus is Yahweh in the flesh, fulfilling the role of shepherd in leading the sheep to green pastures. Note also the unusual details about how they were seated, in ranks, in hundreds, and in 50s. Jesus doesn't just say, have them sit down. Why this detail? Well, I think it is another allusion to Israel in the wilderness. Recall how Jethro advised his son-in-law Moses to appoint able men to help rule over the people. He told Moses to appoint rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of 50s, and rulers of 10. Even the language about seating takes the people back to Israel of old. And the story continues in verse 41. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all. What must the disciples have been thinking? 5 loaves? 2 fish? All these people? Well, children, I think you might be able to help us here. Let's say that I were to give you 2 crackers and a Capri Sun, okay? 2 crackers and a Capri Sun, and I tell you now, divide them up. I don't want you to feed everybody in this congregation. Do you think that would work? Do you think it would work? You can answer out loud. No, it wouldn't work. There wouldn't be nearly enough. You could barely get a crumb. And even if you poured this in those little communion cups that we use, it wouldn't be enough to go around. Maybe you can put yourself now in the sandals of Jesus' disciples who are commanded to feed a crowd with just 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. What would you be thinking? You don't have a head count yet. But you know this is a huge crowd that would take almost a year's wages to feed. And Jesus divides up 5 loaves and 2 fish for the disciples to give them all food. It sure doesn't look like it is going to go around to everybody. And that is why the next 2 verses are remarkable. Verse 30, 42. So they all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fish. Now, there's no description of the miracle that took place. Did Jesus have these loaves of bread and did they sort of regenerate as he took the pieces and gave them to the disciples? Or the same with the fish? Or did he give each disciple just a small piece of fish and a small piece of bread in a basket, and as they pulled it out, it kept multiplying? We don't know. We don't know exactly how it happened, but it was a miracle. All we know is that Jesus said a prayer, broke 5 loaves of bread, and divided 2 fish, and the whole multitude was fed till they were full, and there were plenty of leftovers. What is this? It is a miraculous provision of bread in the wilderness. Well, does that ring any bells? Well, it's like the provision of manna after the Exodus, but it's even greater. Israel couldn't gather extra manna, could they, except for the day before the Sabbath. On every other day, the excess would go bad. Yahweh's provision of manna in the wilderness was abundant, but it was just enough. Jesus' miraculous provision of bread in the wilderness is super abundant. It is more than enough. Did you note how many baskets of leftovers were picked up? 12. Well, that's a number we've heard in previous episodes of this West Side Story. Jesus chose 12 disciples for his inner circle. The woman with the issue of blood had been sick 12 years. The daughter of the synagogue ruler, whom Jesus raised from the dead, was 12 years old. Now we hear of 12 baskets. 12, 12, 12, 12. We keep hearing this number because it is the number of the 12 tribes of Israel. And all of these stories are about Jesus establishing a new Israel. There are 12 baskets of leftovers. And that tells us that Jesus is the shepherd who can provide for all the sheep of the new Israel. That is, all the people in the church. And it's only at the very end of the story that we learn the size of the multitude. Verse 44, now those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men. And the word men here is gender specific. And Matthew tells us in his gospel that this number did not include the women and children who were also present. So there was many more than 5,000 who had to eat. So knowing the size of the crowd clues us into the magnitude of the miracle that Jesus performed to feed them. Now let's have some concluding thoughts and application. In the very first verse of this gospel, Mark indicates he will be writing about the good news of Jesus, the Son of God. Well, what good news do we hear in this narrative? We hear the good news of a second Moses. At the time of the Exodus from Egypt, Moses led the people of Israel like a shepherd leads his sheep. But in later times, Israel's appointed shepherds neglected her. That was the situation into which Jesus came. The people of Israel were once again like sheep without a shepherd. And he came to be their shepherd, to have compassion on them, to teach them, and to provide for all their needs. As Moses was the first shepherd of Israel, Jesus is the last shepherd of Israel. As Moses fed old Israel, so Jesus feeds new Israel. As Moses led an old Exodus, so Jesus leads a new Exodus. In Jesus, we have a second and greater Moses acting as a shepherd to lead his sheep to a greater Exodus, delivering them from bondage to sin and death. And this is what Jesus has done for you in your redemption. He has become your shepherd, who promises to teach you by his word and guide you in the ways you should go. Whenever you read or meditate upon or sing the 23rd Psalm, you should think of Jesus, because he is your shepherd. You will never be in want, because his provision is superabundant. And unlike Israel's false shepherds of old, he will never abandon you, but will always be with you in good times and bad. You can rest in the arms of Jesus, your good shepherd. He has compassionate love for you. And you can also serve Jesus. He told the 12 disciples to feed the multitude, and they said they didn't have the resources, and they didn't. But Jesus did. And with his resources, they did feed that crowd. Now, Jesus calls you to serve in his kingdom. Do you ever feel like you don't have the resources to do it? Do you ever feel like living the Christian life is beyond you? You know, if you feel that way, I'm here to tell you that's a good thing. It's a good thing, because there's only been one person who have ever had the adequate resource to lead the Christian life, and that was Jesus himself. You can't lead the Christian life in your own strength. I can't either. If we try, we're just going to fail over and over and over. And yet Jesus says, if you love me, keep my commandments. So how can we do that? Well, we can't, but Jesus can do it through us. Jesus took the meager resources of the 12, 5 loaves and 2 fish, and those disciples fed over 5,000 people. He told them to do it, and then he made it possible. He can take your meager resources and my meager resources and work miracles so that we can serve him, so that we can be useful instruments in the building up of his kingdom. So take your eyes off of yourself. Take your eyes off of your sin and off of your weakness and place them upon Jesus. Sure, you know what you can't do. What you need to discover is what he can do in you and through you. Offer yourself to Jesus and pray that he would guide and empower you to follow where he leads, and then rest in his loving care. This is a lesson Jesus taught the 12 when he fed the 5,000. It is a lesson we are to learn from this story as well. Jesus, our shepherd, lives in us so that by his strength we may love him, we may love others, we may live for him, and we may find rest in him. That is truly good news. Let us pray.